The last page has been turned in my most recent read, but it's not the one I will be talking about today. In fact, this book was one of my final reads of February. All that being said, here I am, no spoilers, as opinion-filled as ever, and ready to roll. All of which means it's time for the latest episode of Being Bookish. Join me today as I follow two young and courageous adventurers on their first mission, taking down communist spies in a post-First World War, and trying to solve the mystery of a woman who disappeared with state secrets after surviving the sinking of the Lusitania. This week, I am going to be talking about The Secret Adversary by Agatha Christie. I'm your host, Ray, self-confessed bookworm, introvert, hermit, and long-term depression sufferer. Join me on my journey through my ever-growing to-be-read pile and enjoy the latest of my 100% spoiler-free book reviews. This book was a bit of an unexpected read in February. Not that I didn't know I was going to read it. I bought it in January specifically to be read for February's Agatha Christie read-along. But not only was The Secret Adversary a book I had honestly never heard of, but it wasn't even on my cosy mystery radar. Tommy and Tuppence, two young people, flat broke and out of work, are restless for excitement. They embark on a daring business scheme, Young Adventurers Limited, willing to do anything, go anywhere. Their first assignment for the sinister Mr. Whittington draws them into a diabolical political conspiracy, and they find themselves plunged into more danger than they ever imagined. The book starts on the deck of the Lusitania in 1915. The ship is about to sink and young Jane Finn is handed some documents by a mysterious man who knows, with women and children going first, he is not likely to make it home alive. Fast forward 5 years and we meet Tommy Beresford and Prudence Cowley, known as Tuppence to her friends. Tommy and Tuppence were childhood friends and meet, purely by chance, in London. The war is over, neither of them has a job or any prospects, so decide they are going to set up a company, Young Adventurers Limited. With plans to meet the next day, Tuppence starts the walk back to her residence, becoming startled when a man approaches her and offers her a job, having overheard her conversation with Tommy. Mr. Whittington makes Tuppence an incredibly generous offer if she agrees to travel to France under a false name and stay in a very well-known Parisian pension. Little does Tuppence realise the mess she is getting herself into when she proposes the name Jane Finn as her secret identity. To her, the name means nothing. It was a story she was told by Tommy the previous day. But it immediately angers Mr. Whittington enough that he considers rescinding the offer of work. Advised to come back the next day and with £50 compensation in hand, Tuppence leaves. However, when she returns with Tommy, there is no sign of Mr. Whittington and his generous job offer. Somehow they have managed to get involved in something rather sinister and incredibly dangerous, and all because of the utterance of a single woman's name. Thus begins an adventure for the young couple that has Tommy beaten up, held hostage, and sentenced to death as a spy. Tuppence is kidnapped. They find themselves in the middle of an international political scandal. They are manipulated by British intelligence, a King's Council, a society grand dame, and a wealthy American heir. And even worse, through it all, they are floundering because they are in way above their heads. All this starts because of a woman, Jane Finn. Remember her from the Lusitania? But will everyone get a happy ending, or will one or both of the young adventurers meet their end at the hand of Bolshevik spies? The mysterious Mr. Brown, who is he? Or perhaps British intelligence has more secrets they would prefer to stay exactly that way. No sooner has a month begun than it feels that it's already halfway over. I'm not sure why. Okay, so not quite the case in this instance, but it will soon be Easter and then we'll be in April and a quarter of the year will be gone. Now, I'm not saying I want to rush through this year, good grief, no. Because believe me, I really don't. However, it's incredible how quickly time seems to just be passing by. Though my reading has slowed down quite a lot this year, I have read through 2 books so far in March, so I'm feeling quite pleased with my progress. Last year, I promised myself that I was going to try and read some different genres. And in a strange way, I think that The Secret Adversary qualifies for that, despite being an Agatha Christie novel. And in a moment, I will go into exactly why. I'm not going to spoil the ending of this book, because what is a mystery novel if the mystery is unveiled? But I am going to take a look at some reviews, because I get the feeling from looking at the Goodreads page that I will be quite surprised at what I find. I know I have often voiced my review and my view on spoilers, especially when it comes to books. It's no secret that I do not at all like to learn something before I read the book for myself, and that's why I won't spoil the ending for anyone else, even if they ask me. I want to be surprised, shocked, and maybe just a little bit horrified at a revelation or a twist, even if I am expecting one to happen. Yes, I am thinking about the third act twist in most modern romance novels. Despite all that, I do still enjoy reading and leaving reviews, but only after I have read the book for myself. And I have been known to be incapable of resisting a well-written review of a book that I actually have no intention of reading now or at a later date. Yeah, 50 Shades of Grey comes under that particular category. I am confident enough in my reading choices for the most part to be able to say that my main attraction when it comes to the purchase of new books has to be when a gorgeous special edition is available on Waterstones. But there's nothing wrong with liking pretty books, is there? Right? Honestly, someone tell me that there's nothing wrong with just buying books because they're pretty. I'm looking at an entire shelf right now of pretty books that I'm getting rid of. So maybe that doesn't always work. When it comes to reviews in general, I think that they are a really good reflection of how different every single reader can be. The reviews I share in this podcast are from both ends of the spectrum, but that doesn't make them any less valid. Everyone is entitled to their own view, and I think it's important to make up your own mind. I guess what I'm trying to say is don't let any of these reviews, including mine, sway you to change your way of thinking. Books and opinions of them are completely and utterly subjective. Lisa gave the book 1 star and highlighted a number of issues she had with it. She said,
I am an Agatha Christie fan, honest, I am. I can number as favourites and Then There Were None, Murder on the Orient Express, The Murder of Roger Ackroyd and Death Comes at the End, all of which I'd rate at 5 stars. Even books I don't count as favourites, I usually consider a fun read worth the time. But I just couldn't find the plot of this one credible enough to stick it out. This is the first Tommy and Tuppence adventure. Christie didn't write as many mysteries with them as Hercule Poirot or Miss Marple, but she did write several, and unlike those detectives, they aged from young 20-something flappers to aged married partners in a book 50 years later. They're likeable together and separately, and there's an exuberant young spirit to the book. This is only the 2nd novel she wrote, published in 1922. This is a tale of espionage and secret treaties and far-fetched coincidences. And 4 chapters in, the couple walks into an interview with someone Tommy recognises as in British intelligence, and without any security clearance or background check at all, without their having any intelligence training or experience as detectives, because they fell into some information regarding a sensitive case, they're given classified information and hired. Oh, and it involves a supervillain who is inciting a Bolshevik revolution in England. Maybe this was a credible plotline in 1922, but in 2011, that flunks the laugh test. I guess this should be taken as just a light-hearted romp, but this story strained my credibility far too much, too fast.
As Lisa mentioned in her review, this book was released in 1922, just 4 years after the devastating and brutal murder of the Romanov family in Russia. It's valid to say that the content of the book is no longer relevant in 2011 or 2024, when I'm speaking right now. But when it was written, the First World War was just 4 years in the past, and the threat of invasion from Russia was still incredibly real. There was such unrest in that country, anything could happen. However, Lisa's point is not an unfair one, because a lot of the books, especially Christie's, there feels as though there is a timelessness which maybe this one lacks. On Goodreads, the overall rating for the book is a just above average 3.85, a score that's similar to many other books in this particular genre. I am admittedly surprised, though, at the number of reviews there are for this book, especially after the stunningly poor show for Sunbringer when I researched it last week. Seriously, it's a fantasy novel and it's brilliant. Right now on Goodreads, I'm showing my bias here. Right now on Goodreads, there are an impressive 62,076 ratings and 5,105 full reviews for The Secret Adversary, which gives me a nice sized pool to select from. The vast majority of those reviews, 65% or 40,842 readers, gave the book 4 or 5 stars. Just 1% or 857 felt the same as Lisa and believed it was a less than impressive book, only deserving a 1-star rating. France André reviewed this on a reread and is clearly a big fan of the book. They said,
"I've just read this again. Tommy, I know that Tommy and Tuppence are not as well known or loved as Poirot and Miss Marple, but the first book of the series is so fun. Too bad it's not true for the rest of it. Here we have Tommy Beresford and Tuppence, Prudence Cowley, as young adults just after the war, World War I. They have been demobbed and don't have any money. Jobs are rare, and all they have is their friendship and a lot of enthusiasm. While they are having tea, they overhear the name of someone, and later on, while interviewing for a post, Tuppence uses that name instead of her own, and she stirs a hornet's nest. After her little adventure, her and Tommy decide to form a little detective agency called the Young Adventurers. They are immediately, or thereabout, engaged by the Secret Service when they are to find out about Jane Finn, the name overheard, and papers she was carrying when she disappeared. And then it goes a little crazy. I'm not going to deny that the story doesn't make too much sense if analysed too much, but what I remember from my first read is how fun Tommy and Tuppence are. I especially love Tuppence in this one because she is full of life and she's the equal to Tommy later on. I feel like this last part was lost and that made the series go flat. What I also liked in this reread is that I fell into the same red herrings and didn't remember much of the ending. Who the bad guy is pretty easy to guess. Mr. Brown? No. Okay, if you haven't read this, this is not a spoiler. I promise. I wouldn't recommend this as a mystery, more as an adventure book. It's a young adult book, before young adult books were a genre. If you have an idea about Agatha Christie through her other series, then you might be a little disappointed, but I think this is well worth the read, though I am biased about this author. I won't lie, though, the last two of the series, by the pricking of my thumbs and postern of fate, are not up to par. But I really like The Secret Adversary and wish we had more of the very young adventurers instead of them growing older."
The Secret Adversary was Christie's second novel, and Postern of Fate, the final Tommy and Tuppence novel, was one of her last, published in 1973. So they are almost bookends to an incredibly illustrious writing career. But do the characters in this book withstand the reputation she managed to build for herself in over 50 years of crafting intricate murder mysteries? We'll have to see. One thing that the reviews I have shared prove is that everyone has different views. So what I think is amazing or merely average, someone else could absolutely loathe, seriously, or completely love. I'm thinking here, the perfect example is my feelings on Taylor Jenkins Reid, Daisy Jones and the Six. I did not like that book, but I know so many people who rate it high. It's one of their top 10 reads of all time. It totally shows how different we are. I guess this is why I honestly believe you have to take every review you read or hear with a pinch of salt. Anyway, now I've told you about other people's views, let's get down to it. Here are my thoughts on The Secret Adversary by Agatha Christie, completely spoiler-free and 100% honest. Did I like the book? I have to admit that I actually feel rather bad about this, as I am a massive fan of Christie's work, especially in anything that includes Hercule Poirot, our rotund, intelligent Belgian. But I can't help feeling that with this book, there was just something missing. I could easily put this feeling down to the fact that The Secret Adversary is only her second novel. However, that particular argument completely falls down when I remember how much I enjoyed her first novel when I read it back in January, The Mysterious Affair at Styles, which also doubled as the first ever appearance of Hercule Poirot, probably why I liked it more anyway. Admittedly, I went into this novel knowing that I wasn't a huge fan of the main characters, though my exposure to them prior to reading The Secret Adversary was completely down to watching the 2015 TV series Partners in Crime, which you can currently get on Acorn TV, a channel on Amazon in the UK. I'm not sure why, but Tommy and Tuppence just never spoke to me. And because of that, The Secret Adversary and the other books in the series didn't appear on my radar at all. Now, having read the book, I can see that it had some redeeming qualities, and perhaps I shouldn't have judged it by my experience of the TV programme, because that's an unfair comparison, because that's another interpretation from someone else, and one that I really shouldn't have made. Not the TV programme, I'm not a TV producer. I made a lot of assumptions about the book, and while some definitely proved to be right as far as I'm concerned, others were pretty wrong. On the side of right, we have, this was not the Christie I am used to. This felt more like a film noir, something that could perhaps have been written by Raymond Chandler or Dashiell Hammett. I didn't go into the book or come out of it feeling any kind of recognition where the characters or the writing style were concerned. Admittedly, this is the biggest reason why I finished it and was a tad disappointed. Granted, the characters still have a great deal of strength to them and depth, and their backstory, though somewhat weak, admittedly, is there. So once I got into the story, I was able to start seeing the signs that Christie was definitely the author. Unfortunately, this didn't mean I liked it anymore. As the leads in the story, Tommy and Tuppence should have been so much more well-formed, determined, driven, and everything else that a pair of lead protagonists should be. But half the time it felt as though they were being led around by a ring through the nose, easily manipulated, and incredibly naive. Yes, they are young in the first book, but they've been through a war, and I feel that Christie chose to show this youth by indicating their impulsive and carefree nature. I mean, starting this investigative company together literally was a, oh, let's start this, I've got a great idea. Yes, let's do that, put an advert in the paper. Though they are aware of the sensitivity and importance of the job they have taken, they don't seem to give it much thought before jumping right in with both feet, having no idea of the potential danger they are about to put themselves in. Tommy and Tuppence are likeable enough, but I just couldn't equate them with the characters I have grown to love in Poirot and Marple. Their behaviour is not thought out. They rely far too much on the intellect and actions of others. And though they managed to solve the mystery, it isn't because they survived on their wits, but more that they had the resource of other people to fall back on. I can honestly say that I don't think I will be returning to the world of Tommy and Tuppence, at least by choice. While most of Christie's work seems to stand the test of time, and despite referring to events that identify the period it was written in quite often, it doesn't date as badly as this particular novel did, at least as far as I'm concerned. What surprised me most about the book? I think that the feel of the book surprised me the most. As I have already said, it felt very much like it was written by another author altogether. This was less a mystery than it was a spy thriller. I could easily imagine Tommy wandering around in a camel-coloured raincoat with a fedora on his head, and Tuppence playing the seductive ingenue with a childlike voice and pleading for help. Yes, I am aware that is a massive stereotype, but it feels as though a completely different author created these characters, and the story didn't flow right because of it. If you're looking for something like this, or you loved this and want something else, then you'll love these. Normally, with a Christie novel, I would be recommending my cozy crime list, and that would be it. And in a way, I feel like I should point you towards that list so you can read more Christie. However, this particular book is neither a cozy crime, nor is it a cozy mystery. It is something else altogether. And that's why I'm going to post the list that my friend over at Spybury put together of well-written spy thrillers. Because though it's not well-written, in my view, that is where I think this one probably falls, at least genre-wise. It actually feels as though March has got off to a much better start than either January or February. Thank goodness neither of those started well at all. But I am still only a few days in, so it could easily go either way. Fingers crossed it goes the good one, please. As it stands right now, I have finished two books, managed to resist the beautiful double point sale at Waterstones on World Book Day, and picked up a book to read this weekend. All good so far, right? I also went through my shelves with an eye to getting rid of a few books in a mini unhaul. There are several that I know I won't read again, and more that I know I will never read. So removing them will give me a little additional shelf space, and hopefully they will be passed along to someone who will enjoy them either more than I did or enjoy them completely because I don't want to. That is always my hope when I do a mini or large unhaul. I did a large one last year and got rid of nearly 50 books. There are a few ARCs on the list, so if anyone has any recommendations for how to dispose of those, or you are interested in finding out what they are and fancy reading them yourself, please let me know, because you cannot sell or give them to charity shops for sale, which is perfectly fair enough. It's a massive honour to be sent any proofs at all, but they are not the final edition for print, hence cannot be sold on. This week I edited and uploaded two videos to my YouTube channel. I am really happy with that accomplishment, though possibly not with the videos themselves, as I had no idea how long they would take to produce. Seriously, one of them was 30 minutes and took me 6 hours. I really need to get better at this thing. But I think I did pretty well, as I am really no video editor. I would love it if you could check them out and let me know what you think in the comments. Don't forget, if you want to hear about new releases and other books I've read and keep up with my reviews, you can sign up for my monthly newsletter on my website, beingbookish.co.uk. The first one in a long while was sent out on the 1st of March, and the next one is due just after Easter. Well, that's it for this week, and thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, why not share it with your friends and family? And please post a star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of the other podcatchers where you might listen. It really does help. You can also follow me on Instagram as Being Bookish Pod, on TikTok as Being Bookish Reviews, and on X as Being_Bookish. And you can find newer episodes and some book-themed shorts and a few videos on YouTube, where I am at Being Bookish Pod, or Ray is Bookish. Or you can check out my website for the podcast back catalogue and full written spoiler-free book reviews at beingbookish.co.uk. Well, I have a few things left to do over this weekend, and I really want to get a few more chapters in my current read read, because I am enjoying it so far. So until next time, this is me saying farewell.